From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, President-elect Trump's plans to renegotiate a withdrawal from NAFTA has people in border states like New York watching closely. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on New York U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer being elected minority leader. And there's a battle heating up over a statewide electric rate increase to subsidize upstate nuclear power plants. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. President-elect and New Yorker Donald Trump's plans for his first 100 days include his intention to renegotiate or withdraw from NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada. The United States' largest trading partner has already initiated conversations with the newly elected leader about the importance of Canada to the U.S. economy. But as the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports, people close to the border in New York are watching closely.
In April, then-candidate Donald Trump made a stop in Plattsburgh, where he railed about the negative impact of trade deals. He stood less than 30 miles from the U.S.-Canada border in a region where the economy benefits from cross-border trade.
You know what NAFTA did to your area? It's a disaster, okay? You don't want these guys, folks.
Every time that Mr. Trump focused on NAFTA, it was specifically with regard to Mexico and not Canada. And it was specifically with regard to concerns that American manufacturing jobs as a result of NAFTA had effectively been displaced.
Christopher Kirky is the director of the Center for the Study of Canada at SUNY Plattsburgh. He noted that the Republican never unequivocally stated that NAFTA was dead, but rather he would look to renegotiate the pact.
I don't think NAFTA is endangered at this point. I really think we'll see a renegotiation and a redefinition of the terms. I don't think, as far as Canada-U.S. trade relations go, they're in any way imperiled at this point. I think Mr. Trump, when he gets a good, cold, hard briefing on the degree of interdependence between the two economies, I don't think there's any way that he'll look to meddle with that relationship.
Canadian officials plan to make sure any actions work in their favor. Toronto Star columnist Tom Walcombe wrote in Friday's edition that Canada shouldn't worry about Trump's plans, noting, quote, "Depending on how it's done, getting rid of NAFTA could work for us," unquote. In Nova Scotia Thursday, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said he's already told the president-elect Canada is willing to renegotiate NAFTA.
I talked about how important the relationship is and has been, and that I look forward to continuing to work to promote Canadian interests and indeed opportunities for all as we move forward as two countries that have a lot to do together. It was a brief call, but a strong beginning to what is going to be a constructive relationship.
Former North Country Congressman Bill Owens now works on cross-border trade. The U.S.-Canada relationship going forward was among the topics he discussed in Calgary the night after Trump was elected.
What the Prime Minister Trudeau did yesterday was a very, very good strategic move in indicating that Canada was prepared to negotiate the NAFTA agreement. There are always things that can be improved upon. And hopefully Mr. Trump will take the Canadian Prime Minister up on his offer. That would be the best outcome for us here in the North Country.
Audio of Prime Minister Trudeau is courtesy of the Canadian Press and Toronto Star.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Allen, New York, in the spotlight as Senator Chuck Schumer, named Senate Minority Leader. He's the first Jewish leader of the party in Congress, and will have to confront, as this article says, from the Huffington Post, a president whose campaign was fueled in part by anti-Semitism.
Well, look, Chuck Schumer is the man of the moment. He is what is between the Democrats and total control of the presidency, Congress, and probably eventually the Supreme Court. So Chuck Schumer has to make a number of strategic and difficult decisions. Do you oppose everything? There's a piece in the New York Times today that says that the Democrats are thinking that the way to deal with the Trump phenomena is to cooperate with it in some cases. There are some things that Trump wants to do that the Democrats are anxious to do. For example, the infrastructure repair in the United States. So Schumer is going to have to decide, okay, we don't want to appear to be obstructionists. That's what the Republicans were. On the other hand, that's what got the Republicans elected, apparently, as they said no to everything. Look, you have a filibuster for a reason. You need 60 votes, for example, to put on a Supreme Court justice, but not a judge on the lower federal courts, because they've already adopted something called the nuclear option four. So it is entirely possible now that the rules will be changed for the Supreme Court also, so that you need a simple majority rather than the 60 votes. Look, Schumer is going to have to know how to play this, and I know Schumer pretty well. And he will do his job. You couldn't have a better guy sitting there ready to take on this Herculean task. He's going to have to make decisions with his conference on how they go and where they go and when they do it.
Let's stay with New York and Governor Andrew Cuomo, who yesterday said he's creating a new position to review state contracts following charges of bid rigging in state economic development programs. In a statement, Cuomo said he will soon appoint a chief procurement officer to review all state contracts and grants in an effort to eliminate, quote, any wrongdoing, conflicts of interests, or collusion, Alan.
Now, we know this guy, Andrew Cuomo, is in real trouble. His best buddies from the day were bid rigging. At least that's the accusation that was made. Nobody's guilty until proven, although one of them has already pleaded guilty. So there are trials coming. And if those trials happen, and if everybody doesn't plead guilty in this case, there's going to be hell to pay for Andrew Cuomo. So naturally, it's the right thing to do is to come up with these measures that would ensure that it doesn't happen again. Although I can say this, you want to bet? But the interesting thing about this is the governor's terrible relationship with a man who doesn't deserve it. And that's the comptroller of the state of New York, Tom DiNapoli. Tom DiNapoli is a great guy. They took a lot of the power to review these contracts that are in doubt away from DiNapoli. Why would you do that and then say later that what you wanted to do was set up your own person who will oversee things? Come on now. Give DiNapoli, the state controller, which is what the state constitution sets up, the power to do his job and stop mucking around with him.
Well, following from that, Alan, and sticking with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, the governor said the chatter about him possibly running for president in 2020 is not on his mind. He sees a re-election bid in his future amid that suggestion. And he told reporters this week he's focused on his current job and still plans to run for a third term in 2018.
And what do you think he's going to say? Yeah, I'm down here, I'm looking to be president, when he has a very rough campaign coming up for governor. After all, look, he is not without his blemishes at this point. As I have just said, he has these very close friends and a guy he described as his brother facing trial, Joe Prococo. Now, if that trial happens, there'll be hell to pay. He'll have everything on his hands in order to get reelected. He has to get himself reelected. We all know that if you're running for governor and you really are running for a president, your opponent's going to say he doesn't want to be governor. He wants to be president. So he's saying what he has to say. I'm not interested at this time. I'm not thinking about this. Really?
Well, Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, interviewed by the Wall Street Journal and talking about insider trading prosecutions and whether the Supreme Court may ease those, Alan. He said that his office also was witness firsthand to some of the problems that fueled anger in the presidential campaign and led to the election of Donald Trump, who ran as an outsider. Quote, part of the election on both sides was about whether the systems are rigged. And I can tell you from cases we brought, there is a lot that is rigged on the street and in politics.
Well, you know, I'm a political observer. What do I know except to say, God bless Preet Bharara. Of course it's true. I mean, how are you going to really stop insider trading? A little whisper here, a little hint there. You know, people on the inside know better than others. And you can see it, my TIA Kreft, an organization I love. It's been with me for all my years. It's not doing particularly well right now. I don't know. But on the other hand, people are making money, big money. And I'm telling you that Bharara is right. Of course he's right.
You referenced the state controller, Tom DiNapoli, and his tricky relationship with the governor, Andrew Cuomo. And there's another person on that list who is Mayor Bill de Blasio. Well, he met with President-elect Donald Trump at Trump Tower this week in New York City. Of course, during the campaign, Trump called de Blasio the worst mayor in the country. And while de Blasio didn't describe how Donald Trump responded in the meeting, he said it was, quote, respectful.
Well, that's the right thing to say. Now, this is interesting because you have Andrew Cuomo. First, he said he had to cooperate with the president. I get it. New York really does need all the help it can get. But then he came out guns blazing, I suspect, to reinforce his failing relationship with his political left, trying to have it both ways. Now you have de Blasio. Think of this as a triangle. Now you have de Blasio, enemy of Cuomo, meeting with Trump and coming out and saying the meeting was respectful. Well, now he's president, he's not candidate, and he has a respectful meeting with the mayor. How do we know what that means, respectful meeting? It means, hello, how are you? I don't know. Respectful doesn't really suggest that this mayor, who sees himself as the leftist leader, who himself is rumored to be thinking about running for president, and like Cuomo, who himself is being, his administration is being investigated by none other than Preet Bharara. It all gets very interesting, very complicated, but I have a feeling there's an awful lot of jockeying going on between Cuomo and de Blasio as to who has this new president's ear.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. At an economic development summit last week in Saratoga Springs, two well-known figures in the public and private sector offered their ideas on the future of the economy after the election results. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
At the first Economic Outlook Summit hosted by the Saratoga Prosperity Partnership, 20th District Congressman Paul Tonko and Albany area economist Hugh Johnson appeared as keynote speakers. Both men, one in government, one in the private sector, discussed how they believe the new Republican-led White House, House of Representatives, and U.S. Senate would affect the local economy. Tonko, a Democrat and staunch supporter of Hillary Clinton, reelected on Tuesday, said with Trump set to move into the White House, it's time for the two parties to come together and end what he calls the rancor and obstructionism after a grueling campaign. Tonko says the campaign left a lot of uncertainty on major issues, and it's up to everyone in the local region to define what they want to see as far as government investment to support the economy.
One of the concerns I heard most often with this election was that there wasn't enough policy discussion. And so now we're in this vagueness zone where we need definitely to begin that healing process by sharing the definition. You know, what is our region about? What are its strengths? What are its needs? And here, I know that we want a stable supply of energy. We need upgrades to the grid. We need to think in a regional format so that there aren't ebbs and flows of quality supply. We need that across the board routinely.
An engineer by trade, Tonko seeks to boost the percentage of American high school graduates entering college on an engineering path. Tonko says the region is at a crossroads in energy and utility infrastructure, emphasizing the importance of clean drinking water. He said recognizing climate change, ensuring voting rights, and immigration reform are vital to the U.S. economy. Tonko was pleased by the prospect of New York Senator Charles Schumer, the incoming minority leader, being able to advocate for local communities at the federal level. Economist Hugh Johnson said he had deeply worried about the lack of continuity and stability in the economy as a result of the transition to a Trump White House. But he said as markets have begun to stabilize after an initial shock of the Republicans' victory, he's altered his attitude.
He's talking about a combination that's dear to the hearts of investors. He's talking about reduction in taxes, not increases in taxes. He's talking about increased government spending on infrastructure and on defense, which both of those, a combination of those things will help the economy significantly. And I think that's why the stock market's doing well. The only thing I would say, and I think this is important, is that I hope he's sensitive to the fact that you can do those things, but it'll increase the deficit and increase the debt, the U.S. debt, and as a part of a percentage of GDP to levels that are not acceptable.
Nationally, Johnson said the economy has been experiencing a bull market for 90 straight months, and he expects a slower pace moving into the next 2 years. A bear market could be right around the corner. Locally, Saratoga County's outlook remains positive and one of the highest ranked in the state.
The numbers show up. It's as compared to other counties in New York State, with, of course, the exception of the downstate economies, this economy is good, and it's going to continue good through 2017 and 2018, right towards the top of the list.
And to keep the local economy strong as new technology advances, Johnson said he would advocate for strengthening education, funding infrastructure, and research and development.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
The battle is heating up over a statewide electric rate increase to subsidize upstate nuclear power plants that pits Governor Andrew Cuomo against a coalition of, quote, good government groups. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
Members and leaders of the statewide campaign to stop the Cuomo tax and end the bailout of nuclear power in New York have made their intentions clear. They're calling on the governor to release alleged secretive agreements with nuclear companies. Blair Horner with the New York Public Interest Research Group says the governor is proposing to keep three upstate nuclear power plants near Rochester and Oswego open for the next dozen years, using $7.6 billion of ratepayer money to make it happen. The issue is part of the Public Service Commission's broader clean energy standard. The final installment on putting that deal together occurs in a vote before the Public Service Commission, scheduled for Thursday. Here's Horner.
There is certainly an irony in the fact that the governor is hell-bent on closing the Indian Point nuclear power plant outside of the city of New York and yet providing billions and billions of dollars in subsidies for aging upstate ones. The plants that he's bailing out are ones that were ready for the scrap heap. They'd already outlasted their anticipated lifespan as power plants. And this could be the single biggest transfer of wealth from ratepayers to companies in New York State history. And it's been the decision on this was conducted largely outside of public view. The public had, at best, only dim awareness that this was even happening. The governor's ramming through a basically secretive decision that's going to cost New Yorkers billions and billions of dollars. And for the 800,000 poorest New Yorkers, they're going to take a big, big hit.
Horner says most of those 800,000 are in arrears, and 20,000 have already had their service cut off.
So the governor's proposed bailout of these nuke power plants will just jack up the price even harder for these struggling New Yorkers. And it's not even that it's a great investment. These are just to keep old Vietnam War era nuke power plants running, and there's been no public debate if this is a good idea. We believe, of course, that you have to invest in making sure that the electricity grid is modern, that the power is reducing, that the power generated is reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And we understand all that. And we understand that investments have to be made. But we believe they should be made in 21st century technology, not 20th century technology.
The governor's office has a different point of view. Rich Azzopardi is a spokesman for the Cuomo administration.
This absurd and dishonest campaign once again admits the key fact that without the clean energy standard, these plants will close, putting hundreds of New Yorkers out of work, causing utility bills for 8.3 million ratepayers to skyrocket, and increasing reliance on dirty fuel and fracked gas. Without them, it would be impossible for New York to meet its nation-leading greenhouse emission and renewable energy standards. New York just this spring put into place a landmark affordability policy that provides direct relief to 2 million low-income ratepayers, and it's shameful that these purported good government groups are sharing cause with big oil and fracked gas interests and are adopting conservative scare tactics to advance their misguided agenda.
There's more coverage of the debate over the future of nuclear plants in New York at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. after learning in May of PFOS drinking water contamination. The New York State Department of Health began a blood testing program this month in Newburgh, and a Hudson Valley congressman was among those to have their blood drawn. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
So we're going to grab two specimens. One will be drawn right away. One will go on ice. If they choose to test it again, would you want to be notified?
Sure.
Okay.
Hey, so what is the process for notification? Do you know from DOH?
They'll be coming back to the state?
Yes, you'll get it directly.
Yes.
If you come back in.
8 weeks.
That's Democratic Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney when he had his blood drawn November 7th at Cornerstone Family Healthcare's Broadway location in Newburgh. Linda Muller is president and CEO of Cornerstone.
I think it's important. His office is in the city of Newburgh. I mean, he's in our community, and I'm sure he drank the water while he's been in his office. But not only for his sake, but I think it's sending a message that he's concerned and that it's okay. Come in, get tested. It's okay.
He did drink the water since opening his district office in the city 4 years ago.
So my office is at 123 Grand Street, and sure, I often drink the water, make coffee with it.
And Maloney does want to raise awareness.
So I hope all the residents of Newburgh, people who live and work here, will take advantage of this opportunity so we can get a good understanding of whether we're dealing with something that that should concern us or not.
The state's blood testing program for PFOS and PFOA levels began November 1st. With appointments available at Cornerstone's two locations, Broadway and Lake Street. Newburgh resident Clayton Buchanan and his wife were tested. He says he is very concerned.
I probably drink at least 32 ounces of the water out of Newburgh every day and have for at least 15 years probably, if not more.
He believes officials have addressed the PFOS contamination issue aptly in terms of sourcing the contamination and taking the next steps concerning health.
Plus, it's giving us, as residents, it's giving us an opportunity, if there is anything, for it to be determined and treated. And I think that's about the most responsible thing you can expect right now.
Newburgh's drinking water is safe, as the city is drawing water from the Catskill Aqueduct, while a permanent carbon filtration system is in the works for October 2017. City of Newburgh resident Stuart Sachs also arrived for a Monday appointment.
Well, my concern is five different kinds of cancer and ingesting poison for decades and wondering what it's going to do to me in the long term. But not only me, my daughter, I have a child who's 11 and a wife as well.
He also believes the state is doing a decent job in addressing the PFOS contamination, but says community outreach is lacking.
So they listen to the community's concerns, and I think they've responded, and that's important. I think to the extent that they haven't really gotten the word out to the inner city community is a big problem. So you'll notice everybody sitting here is white and middle class. So I think we deserve testing as well, but so does the poor inner city community, and the word simply hasn't gotten out to them.
Shortly after Sachs said this, two African-American women arrived for their appointments. During a public meeting in Newburgh in October, residents and officials spoke about the need for improved community outreach. Meanwhile, Muller says that while coming in for blood testing is important, following up with the results is key.
The folks who are coming in to get tested, and every resident that's in the affected areas needs a primary care provider, somebody over the course of time that will be able to watch their blood results, be able to manage their health care and work with them in a partnership to see if there's any fluctuations from the baseline report that they'll receive.
She says if a person does not have a primary care provider, Cornerstone can fill the need. Muller says so far most of the appointments have been filled with just a few no-shows. Blood testing at Cornerstone continues Thursday, and there are November 12th and 19th appointments at the Lake Street location. Officials say they are prepared to extend the blood testing program beyond November. People who want their blood tested for PFOS levels should contact the State Department of Health.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1647. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers. representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.